So that's emblematic of what's being spoken about.
I want to mention something about Tom. I've heard many of your shows over the last 6 months. You gave me access to the archives, and I was always struck by Tom, the present caller. He always had a tone of breathless shock at everything that was going on top of, what is that, an Irish brogue in there? I'm not sure. But, Tom, are you aware of how you sound?
No, I don't listen to myself. Well, that's interesting.
You should tape the show. And you come across as to my ear, and nothing personal, just my subjectivity, but you stood out because you were just shocked at the corruption all around you. And I think you're leaving Canada, right?
I'm what?
You're leaving Canada. You're going someplace.
Yes, I'm going to Venezuela, actually. They offered me a voluntary teaching job at one of their universities to teach English. So to teach English from a Marxist point of view.
Canada?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry. Do that again, Bob.
You'd rather live in Venezuela than in Canada?
No, I'm retiring. I'm retiring next January, and during the winter months, 4 or 5 months of the year, I'll spend down in Venezuela helping with the revolution, the Bolivarian Revolution. I'm a key supporter, a full supporter of the Bolivarian Revolution.
So you agree that with Greg that communism is inevitable?
Oh, it is. It is. It's only a question of 2 or 3 generations, perhaps.
Well, what do you think of Wall Street being accused of going socialist? And,
well, of course they are.
Bailing out the virtual class.
Socialize the gains and proletarianize the losses. These guys are very—they're very smart crooks. They're more Marxist than I am.
They Do you think you'll ever have to get to using guns and take over on a level of an army?
Well, look. This brings me to the other point I want to talk about just briefly. I want to talk about the future of the United States. What I see happening is that society will become even more polarized. And it will reach a fever pitch by the end of the new president's first term in office in 2012. I predict you're going to see a class struggle like you've never seen it before. Because the rich are stealing from the poor, and the poor are just waking up to it. America's in a stupor. They're dreaming. They're sleeping. But guess what? That situation is changing daily as a result of the events that have taken place in the last few weeks.
Well, Tom, don't you think the Americans are in a stupor because they're in this hyper-media-dominated virtual reality Disney thing?
Of course. We're all affected by it. How could you not be affected by it in constant propaganda day in and day out? You got to be
right.
Superhuman.
Right, so how could you overcome
that
by putting one message on there?
Pardon?
You know, a communist message? How can you overcome the stupor that's spreading over the whole planet with the advanced media?
I think I lost you.
Oh, Bob, are you there?
I lost Bob.
Oh, we lost Bob. I pressed something and I lost him. Oh,
yeah.
Well, I guess he'll just have to phone back. Or you can phone at 416-595-1655 if you want to get in on the conversation today about whatever the heck we're talking about. Oh, Tom, you should have seen the annual general meeting the other night.
I was at work. But you know what, Tom?
You would have, I think you would have been a bit, as I think someone else was there. It's amazing how many people who are big union people listen to this program and are supporters of the show. And I find out in dribs and drabs, I contact somebody who's donated because it's their right, if they wish to if they've donated over a certain amount of money, they can be a member of the organization,
right,
and then they can come and vote at an annual general meeting. And such a one was attempted to be held on Wednesday. And the kind of words that are used by certain people are lulling to the union ears, I think. And it's and what I note about it is that, yes, you can use these words and say things, but you have to know the background of it. You have to understand it. You just can't go blindly into it. And it's, I think a lot of us walk blindly into situations that we often don't understand the full ramifications of, because we just don't have the time to sort it all out before we go and do something. We have to take a gut feeling about it. Also, there's a tendency to think that one side, that one force that's against another force is better than the other, and sometimes they're just as bad as each other.
Correct.
And you sometimes you can't take a side because or you have to be you have to get into sort of a level of pragmatism that actually most people are engaged in when they go and vote. Most people don't vote probably for someone that they really agree with, or it's just they're trying to find something close, or they're trying to keep somebody else out of power, and it's all strategic voting and so on.
I remember when I was I've been a teamster most of my working life, mm-hmm. as a truck driver, and I always had to fight against this hypocrisy and bureaucracy within the teamsters hierarchy. These guys were phony socialists. They would talk like socialists, but they were far from it.
Did you hear the beginning of the program, Tom,
yes,
today?
I did.
Called, at this gathering, I was called a fake socialist.
Yes.
And I don't, maybe I am, but...
It's a mirror. They're looking at a mirror, and what they see is fake socialist, so they see you as a fake socialist.
Well, it's because, they see me as a fake socialist because I don't agree with them.
About an issue
that maybe has nothing to do with socialism. It's they see me. If you don't agree with them, then you are not in their camp, and therefore you're an enemy. And so
right.
they have to tar you with being somehow weak and confused. And so, I mean, or worse, that you're fake. That you're deliberately being fake, and. It's very divisive and sad.
Well, that's the nature of our society. I mean, it's the nature of our existence. Sometimes we too are individually conflicted. I mean, I fight between the good side of myself and the bad side of myself
yeah.
all the time. I think we all do it in our own psychological way. But when we get into the public arena, we have to be honest with ourselves, and we have to be honest with the people. Look, I've been elected chief steward of Local 419 for many years. And it was only because I only became a leader in my local because I was honest and straightforward. And when I was wrong, I was quite willing to admit it. And when my analysis was wrong, I would also admit it.
What, people voted for you?
Of course.
Wow.
All Teamsters, but not the officials of the Teamsters, Teamsters Canada and Teamsters United States hated people like me. They called us Teamsters for Democratic Union. We were, worse than the devil.
We were called the devil.
Yeah.
We were called the devil the other night.
That's right.
Someone actually called us the devil.
And the fact
this
that
is Daniel. Daniel and I
added to it, but this is what we have to deal with in society. We have to. Thomas Paine, the one American revolutionary I have tremendous respect for, made the astute observation about the American Revolution in 1776. At the time, America only consisted of a few million people, and he said, "You know, wherever I go." Wherever I see, there's always division. There's always kind of conflict. Direct opposite sides fighting each other. And he made the observation that this is just a natural, growing process. It's how we struggle to get to a higher level of political consciousness. In other words, what you went through on Wednesday is inevitable in a society as corrupt as ours.
Yeah.
Because you have all kinds of phony people. Look, I've listened to you for a number of years now, you and Daniel. By the way, I'm sorry Daniel is not around, but
mm-hmm.
so be it. But hopefully he'll come back.
Yes.
But I've listened to you guys for a number of years, and I can genuinely say that you don't claim to be communist or socialist, dogmatic or always right about that. You're so open-minded, and that's what I respect about you. You would even take criticism from people like me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you are so open, you take phone calls from people like me. Why do you do that? Why did you shut me up? You know, or people who would object or raise criticisms of you. No, I think those people who have criticized you should take a good look in the mirror at themselves.
We feed off of the of differences of opinion. That's what this whole show should be about and is about. It's
that's
about
right.
an exchange of opinion if you want.
That's why this show will continue to grow, because it's allowed for genuine democracy, not democracy in form, democracy in content. That's
Bob's back with us. Bob's back with us.
Yes, I'm agreeing with Tom.
Yeah, and he helped start it. Thank you, Bob. You began this little journey in Radio Land.
Bob started the International Connection?
Bob, yes, he did.
Wow.
Yeah, back in the mid-'80s.
Wow, before
1984.
That was Mr. Dobbs and Dave Neufeld began a show called The International Connection.
With Bob Marshall as our front man.
Yeah.
Wow. We were propagandists for genuine democracy.
And then I automatically gravitated to it as a listener.
Right.
And kept track of what Bob was doing through the years. And then suddenly in 1991, the forces of who want to shut down this kind of discussion got rid of Bob. And then Bob was exiled. You were exiled to the United States, or liberated, whatever you want to. How do you see it, Bob?
Oh, liberation.
Yeah.
Liberation. Like I said, I didn't want the wet blanket of CBC and even the kind of attitude, because a lot of the staff at CKLN is the farm team for CBC.
Right.
See, like,
so they learn the hypocrisy that prepares you to be an employee of CBC.
See, Thomas Paine made that observation that it doesn't matter where you go, what organization you're in, you will always run into an opposition. Like opposites have to exist in nature.
Mm-hmm.
But we should take a positive view of it and say, that's how we're going to grow. I'm going to grow because I struggle with you, because your ideas I consider wrong, therefore I will struggle with you, and you have the opportunity to struggle with me. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, it's open, genuine democracy, and that's what, when you try to practice it, you will always run into opposition.
I think that the problem that these other forces exhibit is their need to silence the opposite. They know it exists. They just want to silence it or drown it out.
Well,
what they don't understand is that their views don't have any resonance without the contrast.
That's why I suspect, for instance, America of the 1930s could just as easily have turned to fascism as to socialism.
Mm-hmm.
It was so close, one way or the other, depending on what FDR did with respect to economic policies. But that's what you see. You see people who pretend to be progressive, pretend to be socialist or even communists, who haven't a bloody clue what they're talking about. Yet they're willing to condemn others or call you names, call you a phony socialist or phony communist, when they are in fact troubled themselves and confused, mostly confused, actually.
Yes,
I've listened to the other programs on CKLN, and I tell you, you've got some really confused people there. And I don't know them personally,
yeah.
I just hear their voices on the radio.
Yeah, I'm looking through the handbook. I guess I'm looking through the handbook. Can that be said on the air? I'm not sure. I think you can say it. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, he's a community supporter. He can't.
Oh, right.
Not only that.
This is the programmer's handbook. See, it's. I have to send you the listener handbook.
Well, I don't want it. Don't send me no stupid book about. Nobody's going to shut me up. I'll go to hell.
All right. Okay.
I just might have to run, but thanks for giving me the opportunity to raise my voice.
Thanks, thanks, Tom.
All right. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Well,
yeah, Greg,
that's feisty. Feisty.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add that maybe Tom knows the media landscape. The first critic of Bob Marshall in 1984 was Ralph Ben-Murgy. And look what happened to him.
Oh, yeah, look what happened to him. Ah, he's a big guy. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Greg.
Oh, Dave, too.
Greg, we're running short on time, so can I have some quick answers?
Yes.
I heard your buddy's in the hospital. Did you go visit him?
Which buddy?
Ted.
Oh, yeah. I was gonna visit him. He's talking about Ted Rogers is in the hospital. I was thinking of going and visiting him and flipping him a penny.
I think it's God's way of helping people get better cable.
How is his condition? Do we have an update on that?
Hopefully getting poorer.
Well, he'll as his health is getting poorer, I'm sure he's getting richer by the minute.
Did you did you get the clip of McCain's gaffe? And then when he tried to repair it, he had another gaffe.
No, which one was that?
He said something like Bush, and then he realized he said it wrong, so he tried to switch it around, and he got it wrong again.
Is that a new one?
It's fairly new.
Oh, I'll have to see if I can get that one.
Look into it, Greg.
Yeah, thank you.
Greg, can you imagine being in an argument with Sarah Palin, or you and Daniel? You guys would probably destroy her.
Yeah, I think so.
You know what I saw last night, Greg?
What?
Madam Butterfly.
Oh, yeah.
Or M. Butterfly.
Hmm.
There's a lesson in that movie, Greg.
Is there?
You can't talk somebody into being gay.
Right.
It has to be inside you.
Right.
You can't teach somebody how to be gay.
I agree.
Okay, and then, you know what you were saying earlier about criticism? Remember, Daniel has a problem with criticism.
Yes, he sometimes did, although he denied it. I admit I have a problem with criticism. I think I'll just speak for myself there. But I realize that I am going to be criticized. Even when I'm listening back to programs, I'm criticizing myself. It must be horrible for the audience.
Yeah, I think we all have a problem with it. I have to go now, Greg.
Okay, thank you, Dave, too.
Greg, you know what was funny about the Sarah Palin thing you placed?
Yeah.
Provided the guy started gloating. Hey, you've been pranked.
Yes. Yeah. He's like, and he starts promoting the radio station, the masked Avengers or whatever they were called, and.
That's the Canadian, that's the inferiority. He was so happy that they toppled the giant image that he couldn't control himself and blew the thing. He could have kept it going.
Hey, we got somebody else on the phone. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Greg. It's Ken here.
Hey, Ken, how are you? Ken,
I'm
Ken
enjoying the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I always get a kick when people talk about communism and capitalism and to question them to some extent as to what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to share with your listeners a quote that I remember from John Kenneth Galbraith,
right,
who was a Canadian-born American economist.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody asked him to give a definition of capitalism, and he said something like, man exploiting man. and then somebody said, okay, can you give me a definition of communism? And then Galbraith said the exact opposite, which amounts to the same thing, man exploiting man. I think he was being just a bit flippant.
Yeah.
But I think what he was trying to get at was that we have to be very careful about these concepts as absolutes, because they are not. And I agree with you in terms of somebody like Castro. If we have to describe him anyway, sure, call him a socialist, but I think anybody that wants to know something about Cuba has to get the books out, if they've not visited the place, and look at Cuba perhaps from the turn of the last century, that is 100 years ago, and look at it from the time that Castro launched the revolution, and see the improvements for average people there. It's undeniable. The fact that they've gone through hardships in the last, 20, 25 years, is almost exclusively because of the American embargo, in my estimation.
And look at how they deal with any type of natural disaster. The organization that they exhibit in moving people, whole populations, out of a region that's about to be devastated, and then sending in or having people there being buffeted by these torrential rains and winds and so on, ready to start getting the infrastructure back up and running so that the populations can come back.
Yeah.
And the confusion sometimes or often that we see in the United States with their individualistic approach in dealing with these natural disasters that are inevitable in certain everywhere.
Well, Katrina is the hallmark example under the Bush administration. There are many examples over his 8 years of flooding throughout the Midwestern United States, but Katrina stands out, no question. And again, as one looks into this particular event, what we find, and speaking, I think, of the CBC, it was the CBC or TVO that aired some documentary the other day about some people that lived through Katrina. And actually, yes, there was a Canadian woman from Halifax who I think was killed in New Orleans, murdered. In any case, it had to do with Katrina. And over and over again, we heard how some local authorities were trying to, over many years, if not decades, trying to alert the federal government, which has its hands on most of the money, the purse strings, to do something about their antiquated levee system, apparently to no avail. And then the completely inadequate, inane, inept response from Bush and his administration. And this encapsulates so many things in the American society, including racism particularly, I guess. But the idea that somebody like McCain or even Obama, perhaps, would utter the word socialism or communism, in my estimation, you know, everybody that hasn't been completely co-opted by American mythology, if you will, has to step back and look at that and look at who's saying it. With Americans, their society, their prisons filled with people, great numbers of them, as I'm given to understand, are black people, Afro-American people.
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah. So, and you have to look at these kinds of things and say, well, you know, as somebody living in Canada, perhaps, where we seem to have one foot in either world, that is to say, the world of the left, sometimes the world of the right, which way should we go? And I see more and more Canadians that seem to be pulling, what is the word, they're coming into the gravitational pull of the American mythology about individualism. And I find that very troubling because there are no answers there. The only answer to doing that is more of the same. So in any case, I just wanted to say that for what it's worth, I'm backing Obama, and I hope that he wins. I don't think he's got any particular advantage. I just think maybe it's time to let a black person go into the White House and make mistakes, just like all the white guys have done before, you know.
I did an interview last night with someone, mm-hmm. and in Australia, and after the interview was over, we were talking about how American media overwhelms us here, and similarly, I suppose, in maybe not to the extent that it does here, but similarly in Australia. And he said he has a 10-year-old daughter, and she asked him straight-faced, she says, if Obama wins, will they call it the Black House? And he questioned her a little bit further about it, and she really thought that the reason that they call it the White House is because it was occupied by white people.
I can't. And Greg, I wanted to mention, you mentioned that quizzing people about the definitions of capitalism and communism, isn't Karl Marx the philosopher? Didn't he advocate the dialectical process where you would unfold new discoveries and you weren't too conditioned by assumptions in the revolution? Wasn't that the very essence of pure Marxism?
I'm sorry, is Bob asking me a question?
Yes.
I heard something about dialectic. I can't hear everything.
Oh, you can't hear him very well?
I'll speak louder.
Okay.
Pure Marxism is a dialectical philosophical interaction,
yeah.
And Marx, those that advocate this part of Marx, say that the using assumptions is always undermined in the dialectical process, so that the very question of what capitalism and communism is a difference is a proper communist strategy.
Well, I understand dialectic to mean, well, there is opposition. It's a bit like what Greg was talking about before. There are different voices that can be heard and state their cases. But eventually, you're going to decide, in terms of the economy, how it's going to run. Are you going to run your economy based on a for-profit, interest-bearing, if you will, type? Or are you going to go to some other model? So I guess there are ways of arguing that as the possibility of governing changes. There is no... we're not going to enjoy pure Marxism. I don't think that's going to happen. The capitalists are not going to enjoy pure capitalism. I think the real answer for all of us is we're going to try to educate ourselves or continue to do so hopefully moving forward, hopefully being optimistic, and get the best that we can out of all these ideologies, these human thoughts, and put it together in a way that gives the maximum benefit for, I would have to say, working class people, because that's how I see myself.
What I find interesting about watching capitalists and my assumptions about what will happen, I always think, let's say, after the Soviet Union collapsed, I thought, oh, okay, they're going to just... Well, I was of two minds. My first thought was that capitalism would collapse under its own weight, which I guess we're seeing happening.
Yeah.
But when... I'd see people like Conrad Black associating himself with Henry Kissinger and Thatcher and all of these, what you'd have to say, are successful people, people that that I revile. But you always assume that their business is going to do really well. And Conrad Black's ended up in jail. And the Aspers, I thought... All right, they've allied themselves with Israel, with big, powerful people in the United States. They've got vast amounts of money. Now, evidently, they're in trouble. The CanWest global empire is starting to crumble. They're, whether this is a progression of events into another media age, which it could be, but they've suspended publication, actually printing, many of their newspapers all across Canada. And I've heard little bits and pieces, rumblings, although it was very difficult to find any information when I went to look for it. But you hear a little bit of whisper here, whisper there on in the broadcast media about CanWest Global being in trouble. And you always think that once they've eliminated the their enemies, that they'll just forge right, that capitalism will forge ahead and be grow into, you know, head towards its ultimate fascism or total corporate control. But it actually can't exist, it seems, without these socialist elements. It is struggling to remain in this socialist dynamic because it can't survive otherwise.
Capitalism will reward its own, no doubt, and capitalism actually will also eat its young. And Conrad Black is. You know, he is an exception to the rule. Again, when we start to look into American lawmaking in the last 10, 20 years, we find all sorts of exceptions to rules. We find, at least I have found, some laws that indeed were designed to try to control the growth of corporate power. I think that's what's behind it. I think in the case of Conrad Black, his own arrogance eventually angered enough people that were his supporters in influential places, in perhaps in Toronto and London and in the United States, that it's just like any other sort of human drama. He had friends for a while, they helped prop him up, and then he flew too close to the sun and he angered some people, and it just set him up for the fall. And there are other examples within the corporate elites in the United States. But obviously, of those people who have gone to jail, or otherwise they have been, they've undergone the legal system in the States, it's a barely a scratch on the surface compared with the meltdown, as they call it, on Wall Street. So whatever they were doing in terms of the American laws obviously has not helped to control the events that have just taken place in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for calling, Ken.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Greg.
Yeah, Bob.
We're coming near the end of the show. I have to comment.
I just want to tell you that I don't know whether you can stay around, but because of the computer problems that we're having here and have been having since I came in last night to do some work, and there's some network problems, the next program will be unavailable today. So
great.
Thinking we'll just go straight past 10:30 and probably
okay,
till...
Okay, well, that's what I wanted to say, is that I think, unfortunately, without Daniel there putting in the sound bites and the digital effects,
Yeah.
We're creating a quieter and perhaps duller show, but what's amazing is people are getting to spell out their opinions a lot longer under the, you know, post-Daniel phase or non-Daniel phase than what usually happens in my experience of the show is that there's a lot of interruptions, a lot of chaos, a lot of satire, and this is becoming rather a literary dull show. What
yes.
do you think?
Yeah, I would agree, and but it's inevitable because it's even though I have many little sound bites here and there, it's difficult for me to think about what's being said, then go find stuff, and it was much easier when I'm not demeaning what Daniel did. It's just that he had a system for doing it that I don't have, even technically. So,
right. So I'm saying to our listeners, your listeners, should wonder, what do I like a show where I get to express divergent points of view from the fake left or whatever, or do I like the stimulus that Daniel brings in, which makes great entertainment? You know,
right.
And that relates on the macro level. Are the American people going to continue enjoying the stimulation they get in their virtual Disneyland?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they going to get serious with this situation and go back and move towards real communism, which is what I'm asking you. What does it look like? Are people working with industrial hardware? Are they do they have MySpace? How does communism happen?
Duff is the stuff. That's pretty cool.
I thought I'd just put in a sound effect there just because you said that. It's indiscriminate, of course. We've got, I think by that cough, I think it's Andy. Am I right?
This is Andy One.
I can tell even just by your cough, Andy.
Well, thank you.
Andy's one of my greatest fans.
Yes?
Absolutely, Bob. How you doing?
Fantastic. I'm glad to be on the air with you.
That's great, Bob. It's a big day coming up this November 4th, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And I hope we're not introduced to the most famous family in Florida. We met the Chads last time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to see the Chads ever again.
No.
That's quite a... But I got a bit of a sports background. It finally hit home with me. I like my NFL football. And I dug this out. On Monday night, the Washington Redskins are at home, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are coming in to play the game. Washington is a 2-point favorite. If Washington wins their last home game before an election, a general election, the Republican has won over the last 60 years. So there's a trend there. Washington,
that's right.
Washington to win that game, and the Republican will get in.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable trend there. I dug out of the woodwork there, and I'm going to put all the money on the Washington Redskins for the home win.
Well, I'm glad you're going to do that. So if the Redskins win...
Yes, it's been...
It's Obama will win.
No. If Redskins win, McCain gets in. And
oh,
this is over the last 60 years.
Oh, so what? Who are you putting your money on?
Like I said,
you're going to put your money on it.
The election will be determined on Monday night during Monday Night Football.
So you're
going to say?
Oh, okay. So and you're putting your money on?
I like McCain and the points.
Okay.
You know.
All definitely. Right.
But
okay, Greg. I want to mention.
I just wanted to throw that out there to you.
Okay.
But there.
I want to mention
all these polls. This polls things.
Pointed
I polls.
Hold on. Stop. You're both talking at the same time. Bob, just go ahead for a moment.
I just want to point out to Andy that his relevant observation that Obama's image is so appropriate, but has a racist undertone. When he comes in, he's the black janitor cleaning up the mess.
Yes. I brought that up on the last phone call, yeah.
So that'll at least take 4 years to clean that mess up.
Oh, that's if he works overtime. working overtime.
Yeah, and then by the time he gets the mess cleaned up, they're going to fire him. They're going to they're going to make his job redundant.
Yeah. It'll all go to legislation. But like I say, and I'm looking forward to the November 4th and when we have to stay up for the late West Coast results to come in.
Oh, yeah.
That thing will go like till after midnight, 1, 2 in the morning or something. They won't come off the air. And also the crookedness, corruption, and chaos factor. You know, something's going to go wrong at the polling stations. Machines aren't going to work properly. Some stations will probably open up late and have reduced hours. There'll be long lines of people who won't even get in to vote. So definitely the crookedness, corruption, and chaos will add percentage points.
I'm going to watch to see whether Wolf... starts with the Situation Room at 4 p.m. and then carries on all the way through. How long will he be there, the Iron Man of CNN?
He'll be there. I'm going to call it 2:45 Eastern Standard Time, November 5th.
Do you remember when Walter Cronkite would be there for long periods of time during a broadcast, and it'd be a marathon session, and he'd undo his tie, and he'd be sweating?
They'd order food in.
Be sitting there, and he'd be looking weary. I want to see Wolf look like that, because I've never seen him look weary.
He never gets frazzled. He's always in the Situation Room.
Right.
You know.
It looks air-conditioned in there.
From the world of Leonard Cohen, we're going to have a soundtrack in the living room all night of the election, November 4th. And from the song, from the album The Future, there's a cut there called Democracy Is Coming to the USA.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that tune?
Yeah, I think so.
He's very good.
Leonard Cohen.
I want to say hello to Dave, too, out there.
Yes.
I hope he has a big election. I hope he gets out to vote somewhere, Dave, too. And that's all for that. So don't forget, if Washington Redskins win on Monday Night Football, the election is over. The Republican is in. That's the trend.
All right. Thank you, Andy.
Bye, Bob.
Bye, Eddie.
There goes Andy. He's off.
Now, Greg.
That was Andy's exit theme.
All right.
I'm going to stick with that.
Can I say this? Two points.
Yes.
I wanted to say that it was liberating to be free of the mono media diet in Canada when I moved to the States. But actually being in the United States among the chemical bodies, the citizens and the people, is quite alienating because I was born in Europe and have a whole different sensibility. Then I lived in Canada. And I want to say that for my chemical body, what we call the physical body, it was interesting adapting to the social manners of Americans and the racism and the gender conflict and the class and all that stuff. But I could ignore it in the wonderful utopia of media that I could experience, especially in New York City. So I want to make that distinction. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
The problem dealing with the American psyche, which is very generous socially, but superficial, because in the end, They go out to be alone. They're the only culture goes out to be alone, they go home to be social. The rest of the world goes out to be social and goes home to be alone. So it's for a gregarious person like me, the anti-sociality when they're out alone, they go into movies and clubs and that, what we call the aggressive Sopranos-like reality of the American psyche, is a bit disturbing. I have to get used to it.
I think Americans don't like to invite you into their home. They're not comfortable with that. They like to go out. They like to go out to restaurants. They don't like to have you in your home.
No, you've got it backwards.
I don't think so.
Now, listen, the pattern was in Europe that Europeans, and I grew up there, I know this, never invited you to their homes.
I disagree with you.
Okay. Now, what you're describing is what's happened since television came into America. It has flipped in the United States over the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it was traditionally Americans went out to be alone. They went out on their date. Look at the ads before television. They go out and have a picnic. They'd just be the couple by themselves. They wouldn't talk to anybody else.
No.
But it changed over the last 30 years. Now it's all mixed up, and you can say the blue states are advocating going out to be social, and the red states want to go out to be alone. That's the conflict of the family versus the new socialist, communist, media elite world.
Who's blue and who's red?
Blue is the liberals.
Oh, yeah?
The media elite, and the reds are the family neocon reality.
That doesn't make any sense to me from our perspective. We see the liberals here have adopted the red. And the Tories, the blue. It's all reversed in the United States. I watch all that red and blue stuff, and I go, oh, no, I don't understand.
Well, now you know.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. Yeah. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Greg. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. I haven't listened for a little while, so I didn't know that Daniel was kaput.
No, he's not kaput.
It's Heather. It's time for the Heather Dobbs reunion.
No, it's time for me to make a few comments before anybody jumps in.
All right.
First of all, with Conrad Black... Okay, Conrad had a huge ego. He was used. He was a front man for David Radler. David Radler, who was his silent partner, gave state's evidence against Black, mm-hmm. and Black ended up in the joint. And Radler, who was the real person behind all of Black's movements, was had escaped by not doing that, by giving over evidence against that. So Black was just used. Also, in terms of Cuba,
Okay,
Batista was there before Castro came and kicked him out with Che. Batista was given suitcases and suitcases full of money every time that Meyer Lansky, who was head of the American Mafia, came to Cuba and put his brothels down there and his casinos. And every time that he came down to visit there, he gave Batista at least $100,000 in a suitcase full of money every time he came to keep Batista eating out of his hands so that they could continue doing what they were doing in Cuba. Okay, that mafia. Mm-hmm. And it was Che and it was Castro that got the American mafia out of Cuba. And these mafia went back to Florida primarily, although they are still in Vegas, New York, Hollywood, and so on. And these are the same people that have been forcing Washington, because elements of their mafia are in Washington, and many of them are the neocons, okay? And they have been trying to force death on Cuba, on Castro for years from Florida, and they've shot down planes and they've bombed parts of Cuba and so on and so forth. This is the same people that are still trying to get into Cuba today, and I hope that Castro will continue to keep these parasites out of there. Che, as I told you before, who went to communist countries, was appalled by communism. He thought it was horrible. Socialism is fine, but communism is no. And going from communism to Bolshevism is absolutely no, because that was a genocidal tribal group of people who murdered everybody else. It wasn't them. Okay? So now we also have, I would say that the Wall Street bankers, they were behind most revolutions, and they are always hedging their bets across the board. They will put money into both camps. They will fund both camps and watch both camps go at one another and kill one another off while they make money from selling them weapons. So the Wall Street bankers are behind so many of these communist and capitalist type of things going on, and everybody doesn't seem to be able to connect the dots about that.
So do you think that that's what was happening the other night? I don't know whether you were listening from the beginning, but we tried to have an annual general meeting here the other day, and there were several camps all fighting one another. But are they looking for money or something? Are they trying to find money from these groups that hand out to these warring factions?
I think that they start at the street level with kids coming up in university who are just beginning to understand politics.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are very fiery, and they think they want to change the world, and they want to develop a group, and they want to start another party because they know that the parties that are in there now are corrupt, and so there has to be a whole new solution. And what they do, they create all kinds of confusion and chaos so that young, well-meaning people are shunted off into cul-de-sacs, which are going to go nowhere at all, so that the same system will continue going on as it was. And they understand this. They understand this. So they have these people waiting around, lurking on street corners around all campuses in North America, waiting to divert these young kids who actually could make a change in the future into these little cul-de-sacs of Marxism, this-ism, that-ism, and every kind of schism and ism possibly, so that this stuff will never actually happen, and they will just keep everybody running around in circles, because getting chaos, everybody in a state of confusion, is what they need, what they feed on, and this is what they confuse people with so that they can continue their same Punch and Judy show. So they create...
I tell you that this is communism.
Hello?
This is communism.
Yes.
Who am I talking to?
Oh, I don't know. I just Bob was complaining that I wasn't playing enough clips, so I just thought I'd put a clip in here like this.
Absolute lousy.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, okay. So I'm just saying that that I don't know what's happening with Daniel, but Daniel was quite blatant talking about Stalinism and Bolshevism and everything else like that. And of course, the Wall Street bankers who would love to have that happen to everybody at large on the planet, to have that kind of absolute control over people so that they're just a planet of serfs and slaves and subhuman, useless eaters and useful idiots and everything else like that. They would like that to happen. So Daniel was actually he was spilling the beans in advance about what's coming down the road here for North America, which is to go from socialism to communism to Bolshevism, because that's what the neocons and that's what these really diabolical bastards want to do, okay? So anyway, he was talking too much about the Bolsheviks' genocidal goal,
mm-hmm.
and that's why Daniel had to go, because
Whoa.
The people who are actually doing that and want that to happen understood about Daniel was he was actually ringing the little bell out front, we're coming, this is what's coming, folks, and he had to be shut down, okay? And that's what's happening.
I okay? like you.
Good.
I like you. You're the real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, Heather,
yeah.
I agree with everything that you're saying. What's interesting is that Bob Marshall, the first...
Wait, can you just speak up a little bit louder?
Hold on.
I'm trying to hear him.
I got to turn you up a bit, Bob.
Okay.
Heather, I agree with everything you're saying so far, and I want to point out that Bob Marshall, the first host of International Connection, laid out the agenda that you're talking about, and he featured Dr. Beter, who would expose the Rothschilds. Now, I don't know if we're allowed to say the Rothschilds.
No, you're not allowed to say that word at all. Don't.
Yeah, they have
don't
a huge. They have a huge office in First Canadian Place.
I have to hit the button.
Okay.
I just have to hit the button. We're all gonna. Hey, everybody. We're all gonna go down in volume. Now, I just want to say to the audience, just before we go any further, Eastern Standard Time has come back to this neck of the woods. In fact, the entire. Continent, I think, is now on Eastern Standard Time. That means that your clocks had to be set back 1 hour last night. Now, because of that, you might be thinking it's 11:30 right now, and that this show is going way over time, and that we started late. But that's not the case. But in fact, this program is supposed to normally stop at 10:30. But because of a... So right now, it is 10:40 something or other. I don't know what time it will be when the sound of my voice will actually get to you. But it's around that time. And normally at this time, we're off the air. But this week, because the next host isn't coming in and instructed me to play an old show of theirs, I would have done that had the system be working here, but it isn't, so that's why we're carrying on. So I just want to make that announcement for those of you that care, and I'm sure there hardly any of you do, but
unfortunately
let's try to deal with what Heather's talking about, because if these isms and Rothschild supported
you said that word again happened. You said that word again.
Bad word.
Bad word.
Live.
Oh, where's my bad word? Hold on. My bad word. Oh, I'll find it.
You're so slow.
I know.
Good word.
What's up, Doc?
There, I got that one. Here, I got this one.
I'm trying to hear Bob.
Oh, sorry.
I'm trying to hear Bob.
I want to ask Heather what... What is the revolution that she likes? What does it look like if it's not controlled by these youthful delusions?
Well, I'm hoping that Obama will get in and bite the hand that feeds him, as I've said on this show before, because he's being used as a puppet as well. But maybe when he gets into absolute power, he will do something absolutely unreal that these people just are not ready to account for. And that is why they are probably going to snuff him if he doesn't do exactly what he's been put into that position to do.
Well, even McCain says that he isn't a socialist. He just says that he has socialist ideas.
I'm just saying, well, McCain is totally backed by the mafia, okay? His family is involved with the mafia. That's why he's got seven houses, et cetera, and it will be just more of the same over and over again with McCain. He doesn't have a clue. He's just a puppet for that mafia. So it would be a terrible thing if he got in. It would be a nightmare.
On the Internet, what sort of websites do you use, or do you just go to particular books and read them?
Hello?
He's asking whether you go to websites
internet
and
sites.
Do you do internet stuff? Are you?
I do all kinds of stuff. I do library. I do internet. I do books, etc. It's a matter of being able to connect the dots. It's not a matter of having everything encapsulated and you take it like a pill and all of a sudden you've got ideas of your own. I was talking this way years ago. I knew exactly what was happening. I'm 66 years old. Okay. I've been through university.
Well, you're like Mae Russell.
I've been through university.
He's comparing you to Mae Russell.
Well, I'm just saying that I'm not really compared to Mae Russell. I listened to her a few times, and, I mean, she was doing a good thing, I think, but nevertheless, I'm not a big fan because I wasn't really into her that much, okay? But I'm just
saying... Are there any websites you recommend?
Websites? Okay, globalresearch.ca, which is Canadian. Chasadovsky's involved with that.
That's Michelle Chasadovsky, the professor in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Aslan, a Mexican a website. And not the geology or the archaeology website, Aslan, but Aslan political site. And quite a few others. And I would say that Rents.com, because he covers every imaginable subject from UFOs to science to the latest political situation. He is a veritable Renaissance man.
He's funny. He's funny.
Yeah.
He's funny. He goes, and what do you, he's got this whole radio thing going where he goes, he doesn't even do that. He goes, he just has this mellow voice, and he's willing to accept almost any kind of idiocy going on.
It's total democracy with this guy.
It's not a democracy. He's just desperate for guests.
Well, no, I don't think he's desperate for guests. He is a major.
Is he still going?
Oh, yes. He is a major website, and from all around the world, people tune him in. They've been trying to hack him and get rid of him for ages because his website goes into so many areas that are verboten. You know?
I do admire him in the sense that he does put out a whole bunch of material, and you can pick and choose from amongst it, and I think that's fine.
Yes.
And he's very generous, too. We've got in touch with him because we wanted to run something on the show, and because he's doing it for money... I would imagine, trying to. We thought we'd better get in touch with him before we, just as a courtesy, and also we didn't want to get sued. We got in touch with him. He was very generous. He said, "Oh yeah, sure, go ahead, run whatever you want."
Yeah, no, this is what I mean. This guy is great because he's letting everybody have a punch at the bag, and so
now, Heather,
that's why I like
you know
his.
That,
but I don't think he's funny to listen to.
That's why I like
can
his.
You hear me, Greg?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say, Heather, now I know the Rothschilds, you know, through my own upbringing in Paris, and I've known them for decades, or my family for centuries. The thing is that, are you anti-Semitic? I know, I don't think you are.
Well,
how do you deal with that charge?
First of all, I want to deal with this right now. Number one, 97% of Jews on the earth, on the world right now, are not Semitic. They never have been, they never will be, okay? They are from Khazar people, and they converted in about 740 A.D. to Talmudic Judaism, okay? And these are the European Ashkenazi Jews who are the ones that are in the 97% category of all Jews on the planet, and they are the ones that are making the pretense that Israel is their homeland. In fact, it's a huge identity theft.
Not all of them, Heather. Not all of them are doing that.
I'm saying the ones that are in Israel are making a huge identity theft on the true Semitic people.
Some of the ones in Israel, but
Hold on.
I'm just
trying to cut me off.
I'm not trying to cut you off.
No, yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
They are doing a huge identity theft on the true Semitic people, which are the Arabs, and they are genociding the Arabs so that they can take over their identity and their land and their resources and their background, etc., as Semites. So I am not anti-Semitic at all. I am anti-Khazar, if I'm anything. These are fraudulent Jews. They never have been Jews. They never will be Jews, okay? So I'm not anti-Semitic at all. I love the Semitic people. I love the Arab people, and I am ashamed that these Khazars are doing what they're doing to the true Semitic people on this planet and trying to take their identity from them and their land.
Okay, now you know that the Nazis and the fascist movements today in the past used that very anti-Khazar line to create a lot of problems for the Jewish race in the World War II.
I don't know what you mean by the Jewish race, okay?
What?
I don't know. If you say by the Khazar race, fine, and it would be true, and they had the right to say that, okay? I am not going to swallow the lie that these people are Jews.
Are Khazars...
They are Yiddish people. They have Yiddish language, Yiddish names, etc. They have never been Semitic, and they are...
This kind of thinking... I'm not
Look, half the Nazis were Khazars. Get real.
Open to people...
Okay, I can't. The thing is that I just had to dump at least twice there. So, you know, I mean, it's just.
It's a privilege. It's a privilege to be dumped. Where are we?
Am I a Khazar? I think I am, aren't I? I think that's what I was trying to get at, I think. And, you know, Heather won't be, there's no moment of interruption. It's just becomes the Heather show from there on in.
That's right. I was trying to do an
admission there of being a Khazar, and then I was being accused of cutting someone off, which...
Yeah,
I
don't want to cut her off. If she's still there...
I had to, you know, it was the second time that... There were words used, and I know it seems prudish that I would have to get rid of that from this broadcast because, I mean, Bob Ray the other day said that something was cow excrement, and he said, quote me on that, and it seems ridiculous that I would have to cut that out, but I don't know anymore. I don't know what can go out over these airwaves during this time. So, and even, I mean, it just starts, you know, when it gets into this, discussion about this, it just gets so heated and angry, and I just want to, I take the point out of all of that. They're a group of Semitic people. We've gone over this many, many, many times on this show that people who have adopted the Jewish religion and those that have adopted Islamic religion, who lived in that area predominantly, maybe not exclusively, but predominantly, were Semitic people. And yes, indeed, there were a group of converts in Europe that were converted to Judaism. And this is a strain of what we often see as Jewish people, as we call them, in our society generally. We're not really meeting a lot of the Semitic Jews, although we do. It's just a lot of them are. In fact, I'll admit here on this very air today that I am descended from these Khazars, I suppose. although I certainly was never raised as Jewish in the Jewish religion at all, and I wasn't until later that in my life that I found out. In fact, that my mother admitted or found out herself that she had Jewish ancestry, so-called Jewish ancestry, but it would definitely be European ancestry. It's not at no point, I think, unless you go back to the dawn of time, perhaps would. My ancestry be in the Middle East. But let's see whether we've got a caller on the line. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Very interesting show today.
Yeah?
I think what we really need to talk about is class.
Yes.
And there seems to be a very desert existing today. No one's mentioning class or class consciousness.
Well, actually, McCain brings it up and says that he doesn't want a class war. He thinks that Obama is presenting the idea of a class war, but just by him saying that they're going to take more taxes from people who make more than $250,000 a year, he's throwing the whole progressive tax system on its ear. I mean, he's saying that he's intimating that high wage earners even now aren't paying more taxes than those on the lower end, although in some cases
you know, it's not an absolute, certainly. The richer you are, the more you're avoiding tax. But he then invokes the idea, interestingly, as he invoked socialism, he invokes the idea of class war.
Against the middle class, which is a bourgeois term. It's a bourgeois sociological term. Middle class does not exist.
Right. And interestingly, that Obama, when he talks about class, and even Lou Dobbs supporting the so-called middle class, what about the there's an exclusion of the lower class or the working class or whatever the other class is. They're saying that there's an elite class of a small percentage of people and then a gigantic middle class.
Right.
And that's what I find interesting about Obama's rhetoric, is that in my world, the middle class was not the class that I was in. I was in some other class,
right.
And I certainly wasn't in the elite class. But when he speaks, I immediately have a gut-wrenching feeling, because I feel that he's excluding a group of people that I came from.
He's excluding the majority of people.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's my point, is there's a lack of discussion and a lack of class consciousness. And I mean, you find that everywhere. I mean, you look at organized labor in North America, and it's led by class collaborators.
Yes.
Well, caller, do you know that McLuhan pointed out that the idea of class consciousness came in with the printed book? That split the classes of the feudal system and made them more stark, high definition. And that the electric age brings in this tribal, discarnate, electrified, disembodied situation where so people lose the literate ability to distinguish classes. They do argue over style, substance, whether you're in or not, and whether you have the right fashion. That's the new form of distinguishing tribal levels.
Well,
the effects of media are a factor in understanding why there's no class consciousness today.
Well, class came about because of the existence of capitalism, not because of the printed book.
Oh, yeah, no, that capitalism comes in with the printing press. 500 years ago, it was first called mercantilism. Then
well,
when it gets industrialized,
all, you know,
and money accumulates in the vacuum, that's when you get usurious capitalism.
Right, but you could have had the printed book without capitalism.
You don't have capitalism in the feudal ages.
Sorry, what were you saying?
You could have had the printed book without capitalism.
No, that's what McLuhan
says.
You couldn't. The medium determines your sensibilities collectively, and if you're not aware of that, you are a zombie. He advocated becoming aware of how printed book created capitalism and how the electric age created a kind of a tribal socialism.
Well, why would the printed book do that?
Because it allows money to become the first mass commodity, the first mass product, the first assembly line. Before that, there was just local coinage.
Why would a book do that?
Exactly.
Because it repeats itself. Without the book, you can't have people being standardized and nationalized with their vernacular.
What do you mean a book repeats itself because it repeats the words that are used?
Yes, so that everybody's on the same page. Everybody reads the same medium.
He doesn't understand the definition of class.
Bob doesn't
understand it.
Bob doesn't understand it?
No, I understand. I'm just saying that I've heard this complaint that there's no class consciousness in America or whatever for 50 years, and I'm saying the reason that's happening is that television and modern electronic media change people's sensibilities so they don't think in that way. I still say there's class hidden in the Big Brother world of virtual finance, which we witnessed the collapse of recently. Why did it collapse? Because the digital environment inflated it in the interaction between central banks and the world into a quadrillionaire consciousness.
Quadrillionaire consciousness. What is that?
That means that the budgets of the international bankers, the Rothschilds, got to the point of quadrillions.
Yes.
And quadrillions could not be measured and related to the M1 money supply. The M1 money supply is what we determine what wealth is and who's the richest. So a person like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates within the M1 money supply are the richest people in the world, but it does not deal with the off-the-shore, off-banks oligarchy that's been accumulating wealth privately for 100 years and got to the point where their money could not be measured in normal relations of M1 money supply.
I'm
called
M2
and M3 money supply.
I'm consulting my listener's manual here, and this is out of line.
You have the listener's. You got a listener's manual.
I got the only copy.
I'll sell it to you for a price.
Please, I'd love to see it. I'd like to know what listeners can do. It helps. I've had to hit the button three times today.
Yes,
haven't hit the button in weeks.
To see the battle among the quadrillionaires, go to worldreports.org. I recommend that to Heather. Read worldreports.org.
All right.
That's a new website.
Okay,
can I say something about the NDP?
Yeah, please.
And their allies in the labor movement?
Yes.
These people are, at best or worst, social democrats, right?
Yeah.
They don't believe in socialism or communism or whatever. They believe that they can manage capitalism for the benefit of workers, which is a complete fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're also political parties. They're pandering for your votes. They're out there, you know, panhandling for your votes, right? So they've got to appeal. They can't use, no irony intended, red flags, right?
Well, what I noticed, just speaking about that, Buzz Hargrove now has a whole slot on the Business News Network, which used to be Report on Business Television.
Oh, good grief.
He's with Amanda Lang and comes on maybe once a week and he has a whole Buzz section of the program. So he's there with Kevin O'Leary and the guy who goes, "No, I want to make money."
Yeah.
Money.
He's just drifted towards that since he was, you know, fairly progressive in quotes in the CAW. He just drifted, you know, further and further towards class collaboration.
Well, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Greg, just to supplement.
Yeah, Bob.
The humor took over, but which is great. We're livening up the show a little bit. I'm glad you got your hand on the digital button there to confuse the dialogues.
Yes.
But with the printed book, people could see their own national language in print, and that created a sense of national consciousness. That begins with Gutenberg, 1500, you know, after Christ, after the Nazarene, 1500 years later. The thing is that you take the effect of the printed book, which goes for about 200 years, and then you bring in the industrial technology that allows America to jump ahead of Europe with a newer medium, a new technology, and that changes consciousness, and then the electric age makes America imagery a global environment. That affects the idea of what nation you're part of. What nation are you as a Canadian?
The opinions of the speaker do
not
necessarily
represent... Hold on, yes, go ahead, Bob. Sorry, I'm gonna do it again. Just okay, you give a pause and then.
Ladies and gentlemen, the opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of this station.
Okay, I just have to throw that in.
Okay, now play the Zappa thing.
Oh, which bit is that?
Where he says an individual is something.
I don't have that. I've just got this.
What's up, Doc?
But you did have the Zappa thing.
Which?
You know.
Which one? When? The one he talks about?
You began your shows with it.
Oh, do you want me to do that?
Okay. Yeah, say, all right. That I...
Okay, just a second. Where is it now? Here it is.
Please be advised that this program is being monitored to ensure compliance with Canadian broadcast codes and regulation.
They would be happy to put a warning on an album that said explicit lyrics, parental guidance.
Let me ask you this. If we have categories and labels and ratings...
Is that the one you wanted?
Yes.
Okay.
...systems for movies.
Why are you opposed to a similar rating system for records?
Well, if a person is hired as an actor for a film, whatever they rate the film doesn't hurt the actor as a person. He is a hired hand and he's pretending. If a person makes an album and he's written the song or he's performing the song and his name is on the album and his picture is on the album, if you rate the album, you're rating the person and you apply a stigma to that individual, and that's not fair.
And that's the very thing that you're complaining about. You have a stigma, and at the annual meeting, they went after you because they identify your corporate work for CKLN,
uh-huh.
Incorporated. They identify it with you.
Yes.
And you object, like Zappa does, to have the stigma. Whereas if you had worked for a movie, you're just one name among millions of people, so it doesn't matter if the movie's censored. Or
right.
Not millions, I mean, a big cast of people making the movie. It's like a tiny city. The individualism stigma that Zappa hopes that he's not stuck with, making albums, and he's responsible for the album, you're hoping that isn't stuck to you because you feel you're part of the CKLN corporate effort.
Yeah, this is the stigma I want to have attached to me.
Top host, the most effectual top host, whose intellectual close friends get to call it Greg D, providing it's with dignity. Top host, the indisputable leader on the dial. He's the boss, he's a whip, he's the number one pip, he's the most
tip-top,
top host.
See, I'm the top host.
Yeah.
Okay, the ending.
Yes, he's a chief, he's a king, but above everything, he's the most tip-top, top host. Top host.
Yeah, that's a stigma I want. You're on the air.
Greg, you want to be the big Mike Dyer.
Hold on. Yes, sorry.
I was just wondering if you could tell me where Daniel is.
Bob, you need to stop talking, and then okay. I'm going to listen to the person who's speaking on the air. Go ahead.
I was wondering if you could tell me what happened to Daniel.
What happened to Daniel? Daniel is on a hiatus. Sometimes happens. We've been doing the program for, I guess he's been doing it solidly for five or six years. Well, he's been off and on for 7 years, but certainly solidly, except for our 14-month dismissal.
Hiatus.
Our forced hiatus. He's been doing it for 5 years, and he decided that he wanted to take a hiatus to pursue other projects. And I miss him too.
I'm sorry, did you say forced hiatus?
No, we were on a forced hiatus. Do you remember when we were gone?
Yes.
Okay, that's what we call a forced hiatus,
okay.
When you're forced to be gone. We were put in that position. Then we had to take measures to return to the air, which we did on December 23rd, 2007. And then we did 44 programs. And then Daniel decided to take a break.
Oh.
So, do you miss him?
Very much.
You do?
Yes.
Oh.
But what is it miss?
What do you miss about Daniel? What do you miss about Danny? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I just miss his style. That's all. He had a very, very interesting viewpoint on many things.
Well, I mean, he may be back soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what to say. I mean, when people decide, he's a volunteer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Volunteer on the radio station, and sometimes work gets in the way. I know I had to stop doing the program for a few years ago, partly because we were under attack here, and because I had not only, in addition to that, I had work to do. So, and there's a point when you go, I can't put up with everything. You know, I can't do a job that I'm expected to deliver on and be under pressure here because, and this included Daniel as well, we both had to take 4 weeks off because there was just an incredible amount of unnecessary pressure applied to us. And I can't remember exactly when it was, early 2005 or 2004, I can't remember. And we can't do work, actual paying work, and do the show at the same time because we're expected to be. It's like we're treated like we're full time employees that don't make any money, and have to put together a program every week.
Yeah.
So Daniel felt that he needed to take a hiatus to do other to get some other stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
So and I could have done the same. I mean, okay, let me give you here. What would you prefer? Would you prefer? Were you listening right from the beginning today?
No.
When did you tune in?
I haven't turned my clock forward or backward.
Yeah?
My clock says around 11-ish.
Yeah? What, now?
10-ish the old time, yeah.
10-ish the old time. Well, you would have missed the show anyway. You would have missed Daniel anyway. What kind of a fan are you? You should have been right there at 8:30. If you can't tune in late and say, hey, I miss Daniel in the last half hour of the program when mainly callers phone in. Yeah, I mean, it's... but anyway, sorry to berate you, but the... but the thing is that would you...
No.
Would you prefer... hang on for a second. Would you prefer that the show... Would you prefer that the show just were shut down? If Daniel's gone, now I decided that I would just carry on the program. Now... while he's gone. Now, would you prefer that I just put something else on? Do you think that Daniel's so important to the program that the program itself, as a feature of, let's say, what we're doing, coming on the air, talking about different things, having callers phone in, do you think that's valuable in and of itself, or do you think that it's it lacks the value without Daniel being here?
Well, of course, if you weren't there and Daniel were there... It just causes an imbalance, and if you were missing, I would question that, and I would miss your voice and your viewpoints.
What if we were both? Do you think it'd be better if we just both disappeared?
No, your show is very important, and it's very engaging. And no, it's no, not at all.
Okay. I just wanted to. I mean, it's a. I'm not trying to put you in a bad position or anything. I just wanted your viewpoint about that because, you know, it is a possibility as well. I mean, we could put on other stuff, just pre-recorded stuff, and like everybody else does.
What about me?
Yeah. I'm what about Bob? What about Bob?
I'm the most successful host that CKLM ever had. You've only been listening for half an hour, but. You heard the whole show, you might hear my contributions. I think that I'm going to make this a different show and maybe a better show than Daniel.
Oh, I didn't know you were on board. You're on board regularly now.
Well, yeah. I don't know. That's up to me. I'm the host, Bob. I get to decide who gets on the air, who doesn't, and so on. I'm the authoritarian figure here.
That's right. And you're suppressing the fact, well, I haven't had a chance to say it, that I'm the reason Daniel's gone. I explained it last week that I had to get back on the air and I arranged for him to have a dream so that he would think that he was vulnerable and he left on other projects organized by me.
Now, right, caller, right? You know, well, I don't know. I am only taking that from your word. I didn't know. I had no knowledge of this.
No, you didn't.
No, I didn't. And you just told me this, so I'll accept that you're telling me that. I don't know. Yeah. I haven't really... Daniel is... I've spoken to him about it. He didn't know anything about it either. But, of course, that was part of your plan, wasn't it?
That's right. Exactly. And it'll unfold as according to what I desire.
Yes.
So, caller, stay on listening. The show's going to get even more interesting if Greg remains in the position he's in and allows me on.
And Daniel could be back any week.
That's
he could
right.
decide Daniel to come back. It's not like Daniel's gone or been banished or anything like that. He just decided to... In fact, when I leave the air today, and I'm on late today because... I was given something to play, just to tell the audience. I was given something to play by the other host, but unfortunately the whole computer system here is down, the server system where these files are maintained, and not only am I unable to play any of the commercials, which I'm sure you all miss... But I'm unable to play the person's program who's supposed to be on during this time. So I've just decided to carry on in lieu of nothing being available to play. So
there
you have it.
The fact that I'm on, these glitches happen so that I can be on longer because the important thing is that I'm on now in terms of the world crisis and the class battle against the Rothschilds and all the Heather outlines. It's important that I'm here now. That's why there was a glitch.
Now, you know, Daniel is a very polarizing figure. You know that, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Did you enjoy that? I'll tell you
for
what.
For the most part, yes.
Okay.
I have to go. I'm on a pay-as-you-go.
Okay. All right, okay. Okay, thank you for calling, though. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I'll tell Daniel that you miss him. Mm-hmm. What's your name? What's your first name?
I'd rather not.
Oh, all right, okay. All right, bye.
Okay.
Okay, so for that listener, Bob, I'm going to I have some material prepared here that I haven't got to almost on purpose because you're here. You seem to encourage the fact that we just don't get to any actual material, but I'm going to do it, and I'm going to talk about something that we. Do I even have it here? maybe I don't. Did I not bring it? Oh, come on.
See, you can't stop my agenda, Greg.
Oh, you. Oh, maybe I didn't bring it. But I got this.
Greg, I want to say before you go on.
See, you're trying to stop me again.
No, no, I just want to say this.
I'm like Heather with me.
When you talk, is it good that I keep quiet and don't interrupt you?
No, no, it's fine. Don't you? Don't you think?
Yeah, no, I don't want to interrupt you. If you're talking, I sometimes wonder if you want me to respond and have that dialogue effect you had with Daniel, but I don't have to.
I don't know. If you want to try it occasionally, it's fine. It doesn't matter to me. So, now, there was an awards dinner or award for Tom Cruise. This goes back a couple of years. And, again, this is some material that a listener sent me access to. And here is I'll give you an example of it. This is it was an awards, not just any awards. You usually would think he's going to get an award for his great acting or humanitarianism or something like that these Hollywood actors get awards for, these models. But no, it's the Scientology Awards.
There is a worldwide arena where the game is played for the fate of whole populations. Where one side schedules entire generations for psychiatric drugging and marks 5 million more for lethal toxic exposure. Also on the board, scores of nations where no workable technology will even be permitted. And plans in play to keep people so re-stimulated they can barely envision a future. Much less consider the eternal scope of Scientology. But there's someone on the other side of that global arena, someone advancing Scientology on a fully epic scale to a very different future. And he is Class 4, OT7, Platinum Meritorious, and IAS Freedom Medal of Valor winner, Tom Cruise!
This is for real. This isn't a joke. Are you there?
Like Heather.
Here, I'll carry on.
The biggest movie star in the world.
Biggest movie star in the world.
The biggest film star in the world.
The biggest movie star in the world. And a really, really nice guy.
Let's all take a deep breath because Tom Cruise is here.
The killer, Tom Cruise.
The man, the legend, Tom Cruise.
Boy, this is exciting, huh? Tom Cruise is just so exciting that Scientology is very, very into him. Everybody around the world's into him. So here's the Scientology announcer, and I want to hire this guy to do work on this program.
Yes.
He's changed the whole dynamic of the show. Here's more from the Scientology announcer.
And he makes it known, between everything else for which he's known as the biggest movie star ever. Night after night, city by city, through 18 and 20-hour days, Tom Cruise travels this world, meeting with ministers, ambassadors, and the American State Department, advancing LRH technology straight into the corridors of power. His presence alone opens the door for expansion. From the 10,000-strong crowds drawn by his presence and welcoming our new church, to the land of intolerance where he entered a Berlin mayor's palace to take the very symbol of that city.
The land of intolerance is Germany.
Gotcha.
Because I guess they banned Scientology there. I think they banned Scientology in England for a while. Margaret Thatcher brought it back.
Everyone knows when Tom Cruise touches down.
Everybody knows when Tom Cruise touches down. So, and here's more of the Scientology announcer. Now, I'm just doing this as a build-up to get to Tom Cruise.
Can you use that for me?
What?
This build-up, this guy to do, when I call in, you know, build me up.
I'll try and find out who this guy is, see if we can hire him.
And the numbers he reaches are astonishing.
I have no budget, Bob. I'd have to, it'd come out of my own pocket. I'd have to go and hire an announcer.
Well, I have announced that I am very wealthy right now. Maybe I could send you a few bucks.
All right, okay. I'll try and find out who did this. I'm sure he gets triple scale, I'm sure.
And the numbers he reaches are astonishing. Across 90 nations, 5,000 people hear his word of Scientology every hour.
Boy, I'd be 5,000 people hear Tom Cruise's words about Scientology every hour. I doubt that 5,000 people have even heard this program in the 8 years I've been on.
That's That's right. The point is, this guy is writing a critical or presenting a criticism of the psychiatric medical cartel, which is true. But look what happens if you get into one point of view. You turn into a cult and become stupid.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Don't. You're giving away what's going to happen later.
Okay.
Moreover, every minute of every hour, someone reaches for LRH technology or steps onto the bridge.
Now, LRH technology is L. Ron Hubbard technology.
Yep.
That's what it is. It's a Scientology.
Simply because they know Tom Cruise is a Scientologist. And combined with all else he contributes, he has recast the future for whole generations.
Listen to all those sound effects and the music, everything. So here is, you. I know you've waited, you've heard the announcer, but it wasn't just an announcer that night at this awards ceremony 2 or 3 years ago. Tom Cruise not only appeared there, but they did a special interview with him where he explains about Scientology. Here is the cutting edge, the guy himself, the man of the hour, the person whose words are heard all over the world, whose image is seen everywhere. Here is Tom Cruise.
Tools that people can apply to their lives to make them better. It's about improving conditions. It allows you to find out for yourself. There's things that we can do to help you not be a criminal. Get you off drugs, a way to happiness. Clear body, clear mind.
Study technology.
Criminal program. It doesn't matter what religion you are, these things work.
So I didn't cut those together so rapidly. They did. Did you hear anything substantive there, Bob?
Well, Connie Dawes, my wife, has written books with the same point of view.
What and point of view?
Anti the pharmaceutical IG Pharma Nazi cartel has drugged the whole Western world.
I know. I was wondering whether you would be in league. I know, and he's against psychiatrists,
yeah.
Right?
The point of view is very sophisticated and well-founded. Walter Bowert, who... our former International Connection host, Wayne Morris, did a whole series on mind control, which would agree with Tom Cruise, okay, in Scientology. The problem is that the terms we're using are not adequate to the multi-dimensional Disney virtual reality that's drugged everybody and drugged other machines, which I call the Android meme, which feeds on itself. The categories of criticism, if you just limit to verbal stuff that Tom Cruise and Scientology is doing, will lead to cult-like behavior.
Okay, let's carry on with Tom Cruise.
He's been doing it for years.
Been a Scientologist for 14, 16, almost 20 years.
And if they should so much as raise an eyebrow, he throws down the gauntlet.
These are the people who actually... No, I think maybe people say that to you. They don't say that to me.
Oh. Yeah, he's got this crazy laugh. Here's a Tom Cruise laugh mix that I did from it.
There's nothing part of the way for me. It's just...
He uses a lot of sound effects. He's always going, yeah, and it was... I got the LRH technology, and it was like, whoosh!
And he laughs sort of like me.
Yeah.
I will do it right now.
There's nothing part of the way for me.
Did you hear him do it? Did you hear him do that thing there? Here he is. He was talking with... This is where he did an interview. This is a good bit.
Now I remember I was doing an interview with someone. A young lady, and she said, "So, I really want to understand who you are." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, I'm a Scientologist." And she goes, yes, "No, but I want to understand who you are." I said, no. "You better read about, go read about what Scientology is." And she said, "Well, no, but I want to know who you are." I said, "No, I'm a Scientologist."
Oh, that shut her up, huh?
That's fantastic, Greg. Now, this is the kind of stuff that makes your show the best show. I mean... Can you imagine Wolf Blitzer doing expose or 60 minutes of Scientology? They would not repeat the laugh and emphasize that. That really shows people, finely tuned ear culture we are. They can hear the nut, the mania, the psychosis in them. Very good.
To be able to fight and have the courage to be
be able to crush these guys.
Crush these guys. He's got to crush psychiatrists.
Play it live.
Yeah. Do it live. Do it live. I'm going to write it. I'm going to do it live. I'm going to crush these guys.
Problem is, now that I laugh, I think I sound like Tom Cruise. So
let me see what this is. Hold on. There's some...
You've infected me.
But if that's what Mr. Cruise has brought to this world, there still remains one more word on the man. Call it Tom Cruise on Tom Cruise Scientology.
So more whooshing around.
I think it's a privilege to be a Scientologist, and it's something that you have to earn. And because a Scientologist does, he or she has the ability to create new and better realities and improve conditions.
New and better realities and improve conditions.
Which goes on 24/7 in the media diet we have.
Right.
These humans, these univocal, verbal, chemical bodies like Cruz and their cults do not understand the limitation of their medium. The printing press created capitalism. The electric media created this weird world where you have a marginal station like CKLM presenting the greatest show that ever happened, International Connection, that only two people hear.
And here's the other person. You're on the air.
Hi, Greg.
Hi. I'm sorry I had to dump you there.
I just wanted to ask Bob because he is such a media person.
Yes.
Does he know about the schistoscope? Has he ever encountered in all of his media life?
Okay. The schistoscope, Bob. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't heard of that word.
I think we did some work on this before. We looked into it. It's I'll bring it up next week. I found no...
We'll make a quick summary. What is it?
If she can phone back in again and just give a summary of what it is, I've not been able to find any information about it, and certainly no verifiable information about it. It's something about putting images into other images to create a feeling in people. It's sort of subliminal advertising, but on some other level, but.
I understand. No, Walter Bowert did a lot of research on that just before he died. I've heard, Walter, they quote psychiatrists who explain how, 30 jolts per second or 30-second jolts, and the kids are subject to this on TV, that kind of stuff. Very hyper-virtual, excellent subliminal messaging.
Yeah, I mean, I've worked here. I think the caller's back now. Let me just go to it. Okay. What is this schistoscope? Just give an explanation.
Okay.
Just briefly.
Years ago. It was Disney that was found using a schistoscope. It was a film. It was a law case.
Yeah.
A guy that was in film took one of their children's pictures apart, frame by frame, and he found the schistoscope in it. It is a film inside of a film in the same spectrum, and the way they phase in the, you can only see, your eyes can only see 8 frames a second, but the brain sees everything. So the way they phased in the different slides and things like that, you could see the second one, but at a subliminal level. And because he had...
But I've never been able to find any information about
anywhere. Yeah, well, I have found information on it. I have to look up my files. And at one point,
Walter Bowert has that, and you can get in touch with James Martinez, who does the show Cash Flow. I'll get you in touch with him, Heather, offline. He's the one who wrote the text with Walter, and they put me on the board.
Okay, let me just intervene here, all right, because I feel that I'm a little bit of an expert about this. I worked in animated cartoons for 30 years. That's working on film at a frame-by-frame basis. I've seen everything. I've worked in advertising, made advertising films, made theatrical motion pictures, television motion pictures. I know pretty much everything there is to know about making films and putting across ideas on films and how and how images are presented to an audience. I'm an expert about
Greg.
Disney. Listen to me for a second. I'm an expert about Disney. I know practically everything. I know way too much. My mind is way too crowded about animated cartoons and stuff like that. I know about the technique of it. I know about about how it's done.
what you're talking about, A, I've looked for it. You've talked about this before. I've gone to look for it on the internet. You would think that you can find almost anything on the internet.
Okay, can I just,
and this, there's nothing.
Okay,
the technology that you describe does not exist,
yeah,
and it wouldn't have a point. And the idea,
sorry,
and some of the facts that you put forward about 8 frames a second.
No.
I mean, no, we see you can see the eye can see vast numbers of images per second. It's almost unlimited. But the problem is, can you actually discern what it is? And can you does anything actually get through to your brain? Like television, when you're watching television, you're seeing 60 pictures a second.
Yeah.
60 individual pictures a second. But if you had 60 different pictures per second, you wouldn't really know what they were, because my eye is very keenly tuned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can see. Don't laugh at me.
I'm not.
Don't laugh at me. My eye is very keenly tuned, because when I worked in animation, I'd have to watch out for mistakes on a 24th of a second basis, because when you're looking at the finished product, you're trying to make it as good as it possibly can be, and you're looking for little mistakes. People I worked with were just shocked that I could see things at a 24th of a second, but it's because my eye is attuned to it, or I have some skill or ability with that, and that they obviously didn't have. I was sort of surprised they never saw the things. I'd run.
So that proves it right there.
Yeah, I know, but the thing is that, yes, of course you're seeing things,
well,
and it does have an effect. But the thing is that to actually put across an idea
that is cogent, you
can't do it in a frame. You can't.
I don't have my notes right here.
Okay,
but
get your notes. Get your notes. Heather, get your notes together and phone in next week.
Yeah.
Hopefully there'll be another
Bob
program.
Now.
He doesn't know anything about
no,
it.
No, but if he's got any way
of finding... What do you mean? I do know about it, Greg.
What do you know?
You see,
the guy...
I was on the board of
okay,
the thing.
Okay, what do you...
The
okay.
guy the guy that invented it was
yeah.
dead 3 months later. He was in Hollywood. He was working on films. He got the whole idea and got this going... spread the news around. He was dead 3 months later. Okay,
Heather, it's fine to say this, and I don't mind you saying it, but the thing is, there can be no discussion about this other than what you're saying, and you're phoning in asking
so
Bob
asking,
what he's...
I'm asking
okay.
Bob
all right.
if he knows
Does he know?
About it,
all
and
right.
if there's any way that he can shed some more light on it,
okay,
if he has
all right.
access...
That's your question. That's the question. Bob, have you ever heard of a thing called a schistoscope?
I have heard of the technology as you described it. I did not know it.
What is the technology? Explain what you understand of that technology, because I don't understand it.
They can put embeds in there at such rapidity, and the brain does respond to it. And so it's a very clever, sophisticated brainwashing operation that Sesame Street and all this children's programming Disney did. Now, Walter Bower discovered that, the author of Operation Mind Control, and created a counter technology that he wanted to put in the movies. And I can get you in touch with James Martinez, who the two of them patented. And I was put on the board of that company. Unfortunately, Walter Bower died. So we get in touch with James Martinez. He will explain the antidote to schistoscope that Walter Bower invented. So what she's talking about is true. And what
you've heard
is
of this?
The antidote.
You've heard of this thing called a schistoscope?
Yes, I did not know that term. I don't think. Walter
okay, you have never that. Heard of the term.
Well, yes, but the very technology he's talking about, I certainly heard of it.
What
and
technology? I didn't hear it. I haven't heard of technology. It's putting images over something. I mean, what are you talking about?
They can put stuff in the digital technology. They can put imagery and information in there that affects people's minds. That's the theory.
Well, of
That's
course it does. Of course, images affect people. If they put themselves in the way of an image, of course it affects people's perception of things.
Right.
They're watching it.
So corporations in Hollywood did this. Walter Bower became aware of this technology and created an antidote. So
how do you do an antidote? What does he have, a thing, a screen in front of you that spins around and deciphers it?
No. To put counter imagery, positive imagery, is a subliminal.
Oh, this is ridiculous. This is
no,
true. This is completely... All right, fine. This is completely ridiculous in my view. I mean, surely in all my time of working in this field, someone would have said, oh, we've got this technique that we use to make people buy more stuff or do something. There is no such thing.
There is evidence. Various... psychiatrist involved with this technology talked about it at an obscure panel that I've heard the tapes of. We can get them from James Martin.
I don't care what, but there are a lot of nuts get together and talk about obscure things. This is crazy.
According to Tom Cruise, the MA are nuts, but most people think the MA is sane. And on the same level of the cliche class structure, these are not nuts. These are psychiatrists, corrupted psychiatrists, supposedly.
No. You're on the air. And if you...
Oh.
Yes?
Hey, how are you doing?
Hello.
The Sixth Scope is away from picking out non-Jewish young ladies.
Well, at least, I mean, show me the patent. I mean, show me the patent. I want that device. That sounds more interesting than a shiskoscope, whatever, a shish kebab scope or whatever. Shish kebab. Is that why you like it, Bob? Because it's like shish kebab? This is total. You know, this is what bugs me. When I mean, you know, I don't pretend to know a lot about anything, but if there's one thing that I do know a lot about, it's about the manufacture of motion pictures. And I know that there's subliminal imagery used in, and it's been banned. You're not supposed to do it. Rapid fire certain types of imagery you're not supposed to do. I don't know. I've never seen the law about it, and I've actually seen material on television recently that has rapid fire stuff. Well, did you ever see that when the BBC World News, when they run a piece, sometimes they'll say, oh, and we warn you, there's flash photography in this section. And the reason they do it, they say that, they give that warning, is because in Japan, they ran this Pokemon episode that was animated with flashes. You know, there were explosions going on, and the manner in which it was animated, the juxtapositioning of the white frames and the black frames and different shapes and so on, caused epilepsy amongst children watching it en masse all over Japan when this. Yeah. When this broadcast was done. So,
I remember that.
So, yeah, I mean, images do have an effect. I'm not denying that. It's just
and
that
sound.
The tech...
What about sound?
Of course. It's propaganda. It's images have an effect. That's what filmmakers using this technology of motion pictures, it's a technology, and people use it in different ways, just like people move notes around on a sheet of music and present different types of moods and emotions through music. It's the same way with motion pictures and film, especially at an animation level, because... And what we're seeing more and more as time goes on, most motion pictures that we see are animated. They're basically cartoon movies, but we see them somehow as ultra-realistic or photorealistic. But they're animated movies, more and more and more and more. In the past, Disney was almost alone in the feature environment in producing these types of work. But now, it's because of digital technology and the creation of imagery, of super realistic or surreal imagery in almost anything that we see.
Hyper real.
Yes, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello there.
Yeah.
How you doing? I've been listening to you for, guys, I guess for about an hour now, and believe it or not, what the lady and the other gentleman we're talking about is true. They did a movie about called The Agency, and that came out in 1979, starring Lee Majors and Robert Mitchum, and it was terrifying.
Well, wait a minute. You're saying it's real.
It is real.
What do you mean it's real? Because they made a movie?
The movie was based on... No. The movies are based on what goes on in real life.
Not necessarily.
It was... and ironically, you know what was on last night? Videodrome. I mean, it's all... To me, it's all weird stuff. I believe there's something to it. I don't know.
Of course. What do you mean? Wait a minute. What are you saying? You believe there's something going? I mean, I'm not denying that you can't look. Film is 24 frames a second. When you go to a movie, you see 24 individual pictures that are being flashed in front of you, and half the time when you're sitting in the movie theater, you're seeing black. There's a shutter there. Now, I don't know in these digital screens how that works, but in normal motion picture cinemas, you're seeing black for a period of time, and you're seeing images, and your eye is connecting all of these individual frames. Yes, you can put in images that have an effect on people. We've all gone to movies and at various times in our lives, and at times we're very impressionable. It depends what mood we're in. And it has an effect on us, sometimes an effect that never that we remember forever. So that's why it's a powerful medium. But to suggest that there's some kind of incredible technology that's been somehow developed to present these images that where you know what the effect is going to be categorically, that it isn't an artistic decision what's being done, or a that it's more I don't know, it's using some kind of whacked out technology that that I don't have, I've not seen the patent for, I don't have any information about, but people talk about it. I mean, you're just saying that you saw a movie about it.
You got to see the movie, it's for real, it's based on actual fact. It is.
What actual fact?
Go see the movie and then start going on the
internet. What, in the movie they stop to tell you what actual fact it's based on? What movie is this?
Interview Lee Majors. He's free.
Interview Lee Majors? Yeah, that's like interviewing Tom Cruise.
No, Lee Majors is not a psychologist, is he? I hope not.
I hope not either. But if I interviewed Lee Majors, I'd be asking him about Farrah Fawcett. That's what I'd be doing. I wouldn't be asking about technology. Are you suggesting that Lee Majors, since making this movie with Robert Mitchum in 1979, probably was it made in Canada?
I think it was made in Canada.
Yeah, I think so, which drops it in a certain estimation at that time. It was during a period of time when only doctors and lawyers were trying to get a tax dodge. I made some money out of that, working as a working person, of course, out of that little tax scheme. But in the late 70s. But
could I mention something about Scientology, since you were talking about Scientology too?
Yes.
Believe it or not, you know who the most important person regarding Scientology who was able to spread it exponentially during the last 20 years was, believe it or not, Mimi Rogers, whose family goes way back to the origins of Scientology, and because she married Tom Cruise, he was becoming the most powerful actor in the world, most popular, and that's how it grew exponentially. So to me, she's like, it was the beginning. She changed everything. It is the fastest growing religion in the world, and that's pretty scary. I'm telling you the truth there.
I think all the religions are scary, but I just think Scientology is just completely, it's new. It's a new one, so you haven't been brought up with it. So the whacked out idiocy of clay tables and things like that, when they talk about an ohmmeters and all of this ridiculous nonsense that they put out, it seems more whacked out than other religions. But when you think about it, it's pretty analogous to a lot of religions that you're familiar with. It's just we grew up with those, and we somehow feel that we have to accept it because we actually meet people who do this. Tom Cruise. Although I have met Scientologists, I think, at times.
John Travolta is a Scientologist.
Pardon?
John Travolta, I think he's a Scientologist.
Oh, I know. There's a whole long list of them.
Kirstie Alley, all your favorite movie stars are Scientologists.
Well, they're not my favorite movie stars. Isaac Hayes, we talked about, who just died.
I liked him.
I liked Isaac Hayes. I felt badly that he was a Scientologist. I feel badly anybody's into religion. I don't know what. Yes.
Yeah. Connie just gave me the Netflix listing on Agency 1980. After the QPNS advertising agency has taken over, its personnel start quitting, citing interference. Investigating the suspicious suicide of a co-worker, the agency's creative director uncovers a conspiracy to implant subliminal messages within certain television commercials. Is that what you're talking about, caller?
Yes. It's a very exciting, scary movie.
All right. Okay, good. So what they did was they used technology to make a movie, like people have been doing for 100 years or more, and they made a movie that had an effect on that you remembered, that you thought was interesting. And it does have a certain basis. In fact, yes, they started playing around with putting fast projected imagery. And of course, in all of the when they do commercials, they do test commercials, and sometimes they wire people up and see what their visceral reactions are to what's going on, they draw relationships out of that, and
they and they get data, and then and probably it was some animated commercial. Somebody got an idea to put a bunch of fast moving pictures in it. Yes, Disney's done it. They've all done it. Once somebody thought of doing it, they were experimenting.
Guess who's using it now? Rather crudely, believe it or not. Madonna on her worldwide tour is showing images of the Nazis and Adolf Hitler, cross referencing it with Senator John McCain, who's trying to become the president.
Well, it may not be.
True story. That's for
how,
real.
How subliminal is it?
Well, I said it's crude, but it's there. But the whole world likes to see Madonna at $500 a pop. They're still going.
Oh, there you go. Anyway, well, thanks very much for
Thank
that.
You.
And we can all rent the agency with Robert Mitchum and Lee Majors.
Great.
Yes.
This discussion probably our audience will find fascinating, because the crux of the issue in the 20th century and into this century is the mining of the subconscious. Zappa began it with his first album, Freak Out, with the question, who are the brain police? All right?
Yes.
And Bob Marshall, when he interviewed Frank Zappa in 1988, a few years before he died, he asked him, what has he found out about the who are the brain police? And Zappa said he was still investigating and didn't want to comment on yet. But here's where McLuhan comes in. McLuhan was the one who promoted the first subliminal advertising guy. Remember Wilson Brian Key?
No.
Subliminal Seduction, that book?
I've heard of Subliminal Seduction, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that book in the early 70s really got the thing going. But McLuhan pointed out that it's not people that are being programmed anymore. They're long programmed to the point they've evaporated. It's the programming of technologies within each other that this technology we're talking about, schistoscope, is really dealing with. Walter Bowers didn't understand that.
Look, I'm not convinced there is a schistoscope. Just let me make that clear.
Make what clear?
That I don't think that there is. There might be something called a schistoscope, but I can't find any information about it that verifies that.
Well, I'll put you in touch with the person who just worked with it. That's James Martin.
I just want to see some documentation. That's all I want to see.
Okay, well, he'll give it to you. I have the manuscript here that they created to create an antidote. The naivety of their project, Bowert and Martinez's project, was that they thought it was affecting humans. No, it's not affecting humans. It's just technology communicating among itself and its parts.
Okay, if you want to phone in, we're in the waning moments of the program, 416-595-1655. Don't worry, this won't be on again next week, at least from the 10:30 until noontime. The other programmers are coming in at noon. The Spanish programs that you love to hear every week are going to be here. They are live. I've seen them. They poke their heads up in the window there. They're waiting to get in and start their program. And if you want to phone in, 595-1655, that's in the 416 area, if you want to tell your stories about being affected by obscure Canadian movies made in the late 1970s that were scary and had a really lasting effect on you. And if anybody has any documentation about this schistoscope, believe me, I went and looked for this on the Internet, and I found very little reference to it, certainly no understanding of how it was done, which I want to hear. I want to hear how this is done. If nobody can explain to me how it's actually produced, because I can cut through all that bull pretty quickly. I know too much about it.
Okay.
So, hey, we're going to go to another call. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to add to the conversation about subliminal. I think J.J. Abrams has been using this in the Lost series, too. I just want to throw that into the forum.
Why? How?
It's just something I read to create a sinister mood.
All right. Well,
okay.
They're just experimenting with film, the images of. Sometimes people don't even know they're going to have an effect with what they do. They just think, oh, this is an interesting idea. I'll just go do it. And then other people start looking at it and drawing some, as if everything, I think they're gone, drawing the conclusion that they did it with some dastardly intent. I can tell you, I worked with a lot of these people that create, that were pioneers in making film.
Okay, we heard you're naive. The person who's very involved with technology is naive. They do not understand the effects. That's what I could charge you with, Greg. Now, let me just say...
Wait a minute, Bob. What you're saying is that the naive or the creative start creating imagery, and then later on, the scientists
And technologists can measure perhaps what the effect of this is. For instance, look at just recently the Obama 30-minute infomercial that was on this past week.
Got it.
I didn't see it. I saw little clips of it. And on Larry King and other shows, they started discussing what people's viewpoint was of it. And they had both Republicans and Democrats on. And usually, it's if the Republicans come on, they say it's horrible, and the Democrats come on, they say it's great. And that's the debate that usually goes on, the lack or lack thereof.
That's the machine level.
But not this time. They all admitted that it was fantastically produced. That's all that Dan Rather could say. He says the production was incredible. And what was incredible about this production? The thing that was incredible about the production was that Obama was on film. Obama was on silver nitrate film, not on video. Up until now, we've only seen Obama as a video image, created through video technology. And even though we were seeing it on video technology, the base material that was used to create this imagery was silver nitrate or silver oxide film, motion picture film, not digital, more than likely.
Good point, Greg. Now,
it has a different effect on you. It has a different...
Because movies are a hot medium. And to create in the last weeks the idea of a presidential authoritative figure, you move from the democratic effect of video, as McLuhan pointed out, to the hot effect of movies. That's a clever use of McLuhan knowledge for mass manipulation of the brain.
And that's why President Kim in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, when you see footage of some celebration that's going on there, you will see President Kim looking out onto a parade or something like that, and there are all these people running around with 35-millimeter, usually small ones, at least handheld small ones, running around with these things, filming everything on film. President Kim is very, very big into film, and you can almost be sure that all around that area where this great celebration is occurring, this parade of military equipment or military might or soldiers or whatever, you can bet there are probably 10 cameras all around all filming things, not on video, because video is weak. Film is strong, and that's what they were doing in this Obama, for the most part. From what I kind of saw, they've got beautiful shots of cornfields and Obama looks great because he's on film.
Yes, and that supports the idea that Dr. Beter promoted 30 years ago, that the Bolsheviks took over America, and this is their final Bolshevik coup after they knocked out Rockefeller Wall Street. So he is an agent of the Korean Bolshevik hot image. This proves the point of the sources of Obama's power. It's a Bolshevik coup through the Pentagon.
Well, everybody was Bolsheviked over by this video because by this 30-minute infomercial for Obama, because they were mesmerized. Even the diehard Republicans were amazed. It was like a Leni Riefenstahl movie.
Right, and so you can see how verbality or speech as an old medium is anemic, cannot deal with this. Heather can have all this literate information from secret sources or fringe sources, valuable sources, and get on an obscure station and mouth it off and say, people wake up. How can that statement and that medium of speech compete against the mixed media magic, which is now machines talking to machines and not you?
But they're using almost sometimes what you would consider are now primitive technology to evoke Obama.
Because the technology has its archetypal effect. And if you want authority, you bring in movies and radios. That happened in the first part of the 20th century. You want a democratic impulse and a third world emotional multitude, you bring in television and satellites. But if you want to, for the bureaucratic presidency of the White House, you need a hot image, so you make your punchline in the last week with a movie effect that you're describing.
Yeah. You're on the air.
Can we have Daniel back, please? I've had enough of Bob.
Okay.
All right, bye.
They've had enough of you, Bob. They've had enough of you.
We're here to cause agitation, so we need more callers like that.
They've had enough of you, Bob. That's it.
That's right. Well, everybody hated Daniel, and then they miss him. Now I'm on here. I'm raising the hate meter, so I'll stay on because that helps the show get coverage. So please call in and complain about me. Or Greg might waver and go solo or bring Daniel back. Please, more hate directed at me. I'm the original stigma at CKLN.
Don't worry, Bob. He used to try and kill me, too.
Right?
Well, Bob, we're a couple of fine lads together, aren't we? Let's get ratted and talk about girls, eh? Yes, we could sing some really dirty songs, and I find you curiously pleasant company, young Bob.
Yep. Curiously pleasant company, young Bob.
Yes, Greg, I would be suspicious, though. I am planting people to call in to say, get back Daniel, to reinforce my effect.
Stay tuned. We'll have more later on in the show.
Well, we're nearing the end of the program. I think what I'll do is any last parting words, Bob, about this election that's going to happen? Your view, you're saying McCain's going to win?
No. I say whoever wins, there'll be riots, either way. Which then allows martial law to come in, and Heather's prophecy of Pentagon Bolshevik Rothschild supported Bush era 100-year legacy will maintain control.
Well, sounds... Is that good or bad? I don't know. Is that good or bad? I'm not sure.
Nothing compared to the brainwashing going on daily to the kids through the chipsoscope.
Hooray!
Okay. Well, that's been the long and the short of it. One of our valuable long-term listeners is getting irritated with the show, desperately wants Daniel back. I'm sure Daniel will feel very good about that. I'll go and tell him that in a few moments when I will be seeing him today.
But then tell Daniel that Bob claims he sent that caller in to do that.
What? I'll tell him that?
I am priming callers to call in to complain about me.
Oh, you did that, did you?
He was one of my people.
Ah, I see.
Subliminals, Greg. Subliminals.
Just what we were talking about.
Yes.
Well, thanks, everybody, for being here. And things, hopefully, will get back to normal next week. And I've been here. Remember to turn your clocks back. It's just heading up to noon right now.
Greg, this has been like you're proving my point. You're the fake Mike Dyer.
Oh, I want to be original. I want to be legitimate.
Well, you were in the cartoon business, but that's gone.
You're right. We got to get cartoons being made back on film again.
Yeah, bring Greg back. We want Greg back. We want Greg down on Blue Street making commercials, doing voiceovers.
Okay, 8:30 on next Sunday morning will be the time that... We'll be back here again.
And we don't
again.
Know whether it'll be Daniel 1 or Daniel 2.
No, just don't know.
Daniel's not going to be able to take this pressure. Of course, it'll all work according to my plan. But note that I got an extra 3 hours, whatever he did, just before the election.
Right.
How did that happen? Computer broke. Glitches everywhere.
All right. Thank you, Bob, for being here. Thank you, callers. Thank you for phoning in. We had a lot of the regulars calling in. I think we've lost all the people that were here for Daniel, except that one person. And very good to making him the central focal point of the show again, Bob. Thank you. I know that's part of your plan.
Yes.
And you go back to, what are you going to do tonight? Or what is it, morning there now? Or?
Yeah, morning. It's 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, and I'm going to the beach like I do every morning.
All right. Have a good time there, Bob. Okay, I'm signing off. My name's Greg Duffel. I'll be back next week, I think, maybe. Bye. Oh, we're going to take one call. Hold on. Wait, are you ready, Bob?
Yes.
Okay, you're on the air. You're going to...
Please get rid of Bob.
Please get rid of Bob.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Okay, that was another plant, huh?
Beautiful.
All what right. Okay, I'm going to sign off. I'm Greg Duffel again. Bye. That was Bob. Next
Tom
up.
Tom Cruise laugh. My Tom Cruise laugh.
Next up is Miguel with Key Nuestra America on this very station. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Muchachos, ya me voy y me resigno contra el destino, nadie la talla, se termina. terminaron para mí todas las barras. Ay, mi cuerpo enfermo no resiste.